may have to jump up a couple times. The doctor's got me on a dehydration pill, Lasix, every other day. And about 15 minutes. It's...
All right. So today is August 7th. This is the Clark County Noxious Weed Control Board. And we're ready to go. We have a full quorum, Lisa being on cell phone or video, and other members are present. And I'll call the meeting to order. So, first order of business would be the review and approval of minutes from last meeting, May 1st.
All move that we accept as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Thank you. Okay. Item three, updates, and that's up to Justin. And
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. we have had quite an interesting year. The Tansy, I would say, is a little bit above average as far as how much Tansy we're seeing out there. It's not a horrible year like it was last year, but it's getting up there. I would say the roadsides are experiencing a lot of Tansy this year. We still don't have our county spray truck. Still waiting on that to get finished. And we also don't have a current contract with the Department of Corrections, which we've had for a long time now, but that fell through. They never completed their end of it. And you may know the Larch Mountain facility is closing. So we will have to look elsewhere, essentially indefinitely, for that. The Department of Corrections isn't really going to have that going. So we are actively working on what our alternatives can be and where we can look for additional help on that, because as it stands, noxious weed management as a county department has a handful of employees, a handful of temporary staff, and a lot of our time has been shifted to trying to get the Tansy off the roadsides. We have people who normally do pretty different job assignments out there now, mainly focusing on the Tansy, because we're in a tough spot to try to get it all done. Now, all that being said, we've done a really good job. I'm very proud of our crew. This year, they've really stepped up. The total, as it was last tabulated by myself and one other last Friday, was 2,554 pounds of bagged up Tansy flower heads. So we'll pull the plant off the roadside if we can pull it. We take just the flower heads off of that plant and weigh those. So there's more pounds of,
how much was
stems
it?
And whatever. 2,554 pounds of just Tansy flower heads. So when we have people who say, "I see a lot of Tansy, what are you guys doing about it?" We can tell them we've been pulling. We continue to pull. Since we don't have a spray truck working right now, we're doing the best that we can, and it's been going pretty well in comparison to what it could be. We've got 2,554 pounds of flower heads.
You do hear that from people, because they get a letter and they say, It's all along the county road out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do hear
that. I have to do it.
Yeah, we do hear that a lot, yeah. But I have to
admit, down my way, I don't see a lot, And maybe you guys have made it out this, down this direction more. Mm. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, I was seeing it pretty bad on 179th and 259th, and then 50th Ave and 72nd Ave. But we've been out that way two and three times now, and we've been doing a really good job. One of the other things that we have noticed is when we did have Department of Corrections crews, they were known to pull everything yellow. So if we had a lot of St. John's wort, if we had goldenrod, if we had any of the lookalikes, anything that was yellow, they pulled it. It was in their bags. And I was frankly happy with that, because we have a lot of landowners who mean well, but they're noticing St. John's wort and goldenrod, and they're telling us about the tansy that's out there. Without the Department of Corrections crews pulling everything yellow, we're probably going to have an opportunity to do a lot of education about the differences. And if you do visit our booth at the fair, which is going on right now, I've elected to focus our live plant display on the lookalikes, and being able to, you know, have a live plant in front of you that shows you the difference between St. John's wort and tansy ragwort. So I hope that's very educational for people, that they can see, you know, look at the number of petals on the flower and that sort of thing. So
I'm sort of like Bill. I don't have a whole lot in my ditches out there, but Queen Anne's lace has really came on.
Yes, yes, and I do have some wild carrot Queen Anne's lace at the fair as well, because I've gotten calls about what's the county doing about the explosion of poison hemlock that's all over your roads, and it's another one where, you know, I can understand not everybody's a plant person, and you know, I know several people who just say that's a plant. I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's just a plant. So
it's small. It was, hemlock.
Yeah. If some of them are 4 feet tall, you know, and if you mow hemlock, it'll flower at 4 feet tall,
uh-huh.
depending on the year. So yeah, it's education. You know, it's look for the purple spots. You know, it's things that we can train people on.
What can you spray that Queen Anne's lace with?
Oh boy, yeah. So this time of the year, it's just gonna be a hard situation. You're not gonna spray it this time of the year and get a great result.
Yeah.
You might be able to burn it down with a contact herbicide, but I have my doubts about that. The flower head itself is probably, you know, most of the surface area. You've got stem, you've got no leaves at this point, you know, those have all shriveled away. So spraying, not a great option, I wouldn't say. At this time of the year, it's just going to be an eyesore. You're
really
just going to have to deal
with it. Sort of a flat flower or a flat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Top of the flower.
I sprayed my ditches and I thought I had it killed, and boy, now it's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just gonna be a problem at this time of the year. But
it goes
springtime,
into the hayfield too.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, we see it a lot of times. But springtime and fall, when it's greened up again, you can spray it, and you can use lots of your common broadleaf herbicide, and we've been able to control it. But you do have to have the surface area of the leaves. That's what's got to be there. So, yeah. Normal broadleaf stuff will work.
Can you still get curtail?
I don't know. I don't know that you can.
Pulled in.
I thought they sent me to Capstone before because they said I couldn't get curtail. Mm. Now they've sent me to Cornerstone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's
but curtail came up on the internet.
Mm. Yeah.
To use.
Cornerstone.
Cornerstone
Roundup.
Yeah.
Well, that's glyphosate. Yeah. Yeah.
Cornerstone is Roundup.
Well, yeah, but you go along, you spray.
That's not
spray individual
not a great
carrot
solution.
Plants.
Yeah.
Oh gosh,
that's not a great solution.
That's job security. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I broadcast.
So
I have to say, everything. You know, you were talking about tansy
is
for whatever you do. Don't come along 134th Street by Glenwood School, because if you look out in my my berry rose.
So what do I want to use?
I don't have anything else anywhere, but for some reason or other that tansy has proliferated down the middle of my berry rose, and normally we mow it, which we do, but of course when we get into picking we don't mow because we don't want to knock off berries. Well, now the dang stuff has come in and it's just in yellow right now, so anyhow, we'll get in there and mow it and knock it down again. I can't believe how much it is just thick and stuff. I don't know where it's coming from, but yeah. So anyhow.
Good year there.
Yeah. Well, if you do mow, then expect to see all those plants still come roaring back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they survive mowing.
Okay.
And so you'll see.
Even at this time of year, they will still try and push out a seed head. Huh?
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. There have been plenty of times where we see people pull plants that are in mature flower stage, where the bright yellow color is faded and it's about to make seeds, and they put it in a pile. They don't cover the pile, and the pulled plants can still make.
They'll
flowers.
Have sap enough and everything to do it. Yeah.
Flowers will turn to seeds, and those seeds will blow away. So if it's in the ground, oh, definitely it'll grab whatever moisture it can this fall and definitely try to make flowers below your mower height.
Yeah.
You know, right there. So
it's a little tough to spray in between those berry rows. You don't want to kill the berries out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mentioned, where tansy is at. I'll go in order. Enforcements. We have two that I can tell you about that are in the works. I'm probably going to write the fines today. It has been a delayed year. I think we've all seen how the plants have been much later to develop usually in general. Although poison hemlock seemed like it was pretty much right on schedule. I don't know exactly what that was about, but most of the plants have been delayed except for poison hemlock.
I've got a comment.
Yeah?
On poison hemlock. I had poison hemlock up in May of this year, tall, and actually I turned around and sprayed the field out with Roundup, and I knocked the hell out of it. All that was left was just a bare stalk, a skeleton. The skeleton was left. Well, I boom sprayed it. And then I had the weed Gestapo's come around, and they found some down by a telephone pole along the road.
Yeah.
And I got a regular letter, I got a certified letter, take care of it. I was one of the scoffles, but I did go down and take that, and it was blooming. But I did, on my camera, I did take a picture, not a quarter of a mile away, eighth of a mile away, of them stalks that were next to the freeway, and there were just skeletons there in my picture, but there was nothing there. But it did knock them, and I can't. Surprised that Roundup done it, but it was just Roundup. It was a heavy dose of it because that one was trying to knock it out.
Yeah.
But I had probably, I don't know, 10 stalks, whatever. Some of them were out of the city right away, but I paid the price and I took care of it. No.
Well, appreciate that. Yeah. You're privy to the same.
No.
As everybody else.
I need to be. No.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, we aim to provide a service that be a second set of eyes out there, and then we'll tell you it's right in the middle of the letter with the yellow highlighting that says, "Here's the spot you missed." You know, one of those you missed spot, but you know that's what that's for. Is we tell you right where to look.
Years before, 4 or 5 years ago, and so I know that the crews go back and. Recheck that area out again. So.
Yeah, that's true.
We put a road in there now, so it's going to have to come up through the pavement.
Might do that too.
Yeah, and glyphosate will work on poison hemlock. We've seen lots of people do that. My issue that I have is that people will use glyphosate right when it's about to go to seed. And that's a real problem because glyphosate will take a good 10 days to work most of the time, unless they pair it up with some contact herbicide, which they like to do nowadays. I don't think that's a great idea. But you'll see glyphosate in the big box store and it'll have 24 hours, you know, shows effects in 24 hours, and that's not glyphosate, that's, you know, the contact herbicide that they put with it, so it's a waste of time. But my issue is that if they spray with glyphosate and it's about to go to seed, how am I supposed to tell the difference between glyphosate burn down, you know, over time where it's starving to death, and it just making its seeds normally? They both turn yellow, they both make seeds, we're ending up with dead stalks that are perfectly straight. It doesn't look like you sprayed, so early in the season, good. Late in the season, bad. You know, that's where I'm always steering somebody towards something that shows a curl. You know, shows the curl the same day, the next day, that's so much better. You can go back and retreat it. You can say, oh, I missed that one, and shoot, you know, get the curl. So.
Well, I'll say this on glyphosate or Roundup. My gosh, Wilco has jumped the price up on it. Holy cow, man, I needed some, and I opted to go with Cornerstone because it was cheaper than Roundup, but holy cow, man. They really have, you know, yeah, I ended up getting some from Nutrien because I couldn't afford to go back to Wilco again. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually I'm talking to people who have a tenth of an acre, you know, suburbia.
Yeah.
So anytime I'm talking with somebody who needs just the tiniest amount, there's a very different route to go than Wilco. But I had one lady who was just dead set on getting 2.5 gallon jug of it. I told her, you're going to get sticker shock. You know, you don't want to go out and spend this much money and then have 2.4 gallons remaining after 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, this is a problem, you know, that you're about to make. So I was eventually able to steer her towards a pint, I think. They also sell it in a pint for a much more reasonable price. And they have lots of options if you order online. So that's what I try to do.
I get mine from Peterson Farms, and they buy it by the 250 gallon totes.
Okay.
But they don't buy it. They haven't bought it this year, last year, because of the price.
Yeah.
And they get 2.5 gallons of Makazi, which is the same thing.
Okay.
And they just use smaller quantities till the price comes back down. Mm-hmm. But the totes are just astronomical.
You can buy the Makazi in the 15 gallon barrels too, which is really nice.
Yeah. Well, I don't use that much of it, but they buy it in the 2.5s just as they need it. And they're hoping that eventually they can start buying the totes again if the price comes back.
Have you seen as good a results with Makazi versus Roundup?
I mix it with Hellfire.
Okay.
And it seems to get a good kill.
Is that an adjuvant, is it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because I know a lot of us, you know, using it, especially early in the season when it's cold or whatever, we've sworn away from Makazi. It just doesn't seem to work as good, you know, as compared to Roundup, you know, Power Max or whatever. Yeah.
When I use Makazi, I use it more towards the upper end of the, you know, label.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Rather than, you know, the
trying to get away with a pint or a pint and a half, and
it's more towards a quart.
Yeah.
You know, I run it about 2-3%. And that seems to still work just fine. But like I said, Hellfire will help it really get started fast, where some other adjuvants don't work as well. So
who do you get Hellfire from?
I get it from Helena out of Salem.
Okay.
How's Webster Ellis compared to these other places?
I'm sorry?
Webster Ellis in Wilsonville.
I don't use them. I mean, I just get all my stuff from Helena. so.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I was going to tell you about a couple of enforcements that we've got going in the works. Last year, we fined the landowner by the name of Providence Padden. They're right down the street, actually, 88th Street, right before you hit, that would be
72nd
Avenue, yeah. And so if you think right before you get to Home Depot on 205, mm-hmm. there's 88th Street above that. And those big empty lots, there's three or four parcels. It's right next to Seton Catholic High School.
Oh, there, okay.
Yeah. So those empty lots, we sent them a fine last year. Two $500 fines for the worst parcels there. Hint. So I thought that they would get on it early and that they would turn it around, because that's usually been my experience, is that somebody gets a fine, they pay more attention next year. However, our field inspector, John Wilson, has noted that they haven't. They've done nothing for the whole season on it. And I got a hot tip from him that he figured they'd be mowing it, and I went out there last Friday, and sure enough, they were mowing it. And mowing it last Friday was meaningless, because most of the seeds are off the plants on the ground, getting run over by the mower at this point. Much of the infestations are inside the blackberry brambles at the north and south ends of the property. So I took pictures last Friday. I'll probably write the fine today, but that's an enforcement that I was really hoping would go differently this year, because we had quite the saga by the end of it trying to actually get that whole thing closed out.
Maybe they consider that the fine is cheaper than spray.
Well, what's weird, I would think that too. And the second year in a row, the fine goes up by $250. But what's weird is they have Crystal Greens as their landscaper, and they're mowing it now, which blows my mind, because if I was looking at it only from a financial standpoint, I could conclude, well, it cost me $1,000 to get a fine. And anytime I go get a mower out there, you know, or if I want to have somebody spray it, we're looking at more than that. You know, let's be honest, for that big a parcel, they're gonna charge more than $1,000. And I could look at it from that perspective, but then it doesn't make sense for them to mow it right now. And the last correspondence I had on Friday with Crystal Greens, I said, This has propagated, and mowing it's, he was advised not to mow it. He was told by John Wilson, don't mow this, there's no point. He was advised that if you want to mitigate some of the seeds that are still on the plants, you can cut, you know, like with a machete, and put into bags those plants, which, I mean, I understand. That's not a great job you want to do. Hack your way through the blackberries to try to get to these plants, to put them into garbage bags that are you're taking through blackberry brambles. Like, that doesn't sound great. But this is all 11th hour, you know, borders on shenanigans at this point. Like, you can't. It's just not. Yeah. So he told us that he was going to cut and bag it. They didn't do that. So that's where we're at with them. Looks like it'll be another long process. I don't know. One of the issues that we're running into with these sorts of properties, not just with them, but with several others, is that there's a lot of turnover right now. So the land manager that I talked to, project manager, you know, whoever is in charge and responsible for seeing that this issue gets resolved, after I've explained everything, done the site visit, held their hand, you know, got them in touch with everybody, they're gone. And I have to start over again the next year with somebody else. So I'm getting used to that, and you know, it's just part of the deal. But that's what I'm seeing with a lot of these properties that contributes to the problem. So I'd be happy to give any other information you want about that one. The only other one that I will bring to your attention at this point is another property with poison hemlock just down the street from us, actually. If you go north on St. John's and you don't even get to 88th Street, you look to your right, there's a new fence that's gone up, a new metal fence around what used to be a used car lot just south of 88th Street. And there's a gas station on the northeast corner, but south of that, there's two empty lots. One has controlled the poison hemlock this year pretty good. They planted bamboo and some other stuff and put up a little building inside this new metal fence. South of them, though, that lot hasn't done anything. And it's, once again, year after year after year where the problem has gotten worse and worse. So that's the other one that I'll be writing today or tomorrow. And I imagine that taking a look at some of the Tansy properties that are still out there, there may be a couple of those that go to a fine, but we'll see. Usually what I'm doing now is I'm actually waiting until the seeds are blowing off the plant. You know, we have half the seeds, you know, blowing off, because at that point, if they try to do anything at the last moment, it's it's going to change anything.
Farm on the corner of Landerholm and 40th,
mm-hmm.
that never does anything until everything's just ready to blow away, and then they mow it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And that annoys me because I live the other way on Landerholm, and it's like, you know, wind blows that way, it all blows over here.
Yep.
Are both of these for poison hemlock?
They are, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the maturity of the seeds on poison hemlock is such that that cat's out of the bag, you know. We still have some places where Tansy is in the prime of its youth and trying to start the flowers. We have some that we're still able to find that make good, fair displays, where we pull it and it's still bright yellow. But, yeah. Tansy will be next. It's just a later year than normal. You know, at this meeting, usually we would be talking about the appeals to the fines I've already written. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's just a later year this time around. Next, I wanted to talk about the Tansy signs. We've had, I would say, a little bit more than last time where they quickly disappeared. And we have found somebody has decided to appropriate a sign that we put out and put it at the end of a driver neighbor's driveway, facing the person as they drive into their driveway. So I think some of this disappearing sign is probably for that reason. So
I have to admit, I've seen them around. I'm surprised this year I'm seeing a fair number. Yeah.
So it's maybe a little bit more attrition than last year, but and especially early attrition, which I think is due to people moving them for, you know, funny reasons. not so much that they get mowed over by the roadside mower or lost due to, you know, vehicle collision or whatever, but I think we will probably want to order some more, and, you know, mm-hmm. it's not a giant expense, but we'll be figuring that out so that we don't have any shortage moving forward. I felt like we got good coverage across the county, got them in front of the people that need to see it. Even without the help of the guy who moves it to his neighbor's place, I think we did a pretty good job.
Down there across from Woodland, you come across, you can turn towards Lake Center, towards Dan Boyd. They put a lot of political signs out there. You guys put one of your Tansy signs out there, and the mower came through there and he took them all out.
Mm-hmm. Figured it was just another political sign, huh?
Yeah.
So that's one place I don't think they should put anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I specifically gave the field inspectors instructions to look for the political signs and to put it where you're seeing the political signs. And the reason is because that tends to be an area where you slow down. You either come to like a T intersection or whatever. And if people are putting the political signs out there, it generally is safer to be able to put a sign out. And you don't have one of these roadside situations that's just bad, where my guys are going to get hurt trying to put out a sign, you know. So that's been kind of the rationale there. But some of the places that we put them out, I don't see anything but our signs. So.
I don't know whether you put anything out in Ridgefield, and I don't know what their policy is, but I know their policy is in code enforcement. I seen her and a helper the other day. They were pulling up signs, but these Lennar Home signs, and that if they're in the right of way, they take them out. But I actually questioned that one about the Tansy signs, but they do a sweep every week. They keep them and tell them they've got them. They want to come get them. Otherwise, then they finally throw them in waste management's dumpster and ship them off. But they are pretty tenacious on that to keep them out of the right way.
Well, yeah, I know that by law they're required to remove their political signs after that's all done. So,
is it ever enforced?
I don't know that it ever is.
Yeah.
I think the mower is the one that really ends up getting. So I mentioned the county fair a little bit in passing before. So far, the people who've had shifts have found that we have had really good interactions, lots of engagement, and being able to have meaningful conversations about topics that are important to our program. So that's really positive. I'm glad to be back at the fair and have things be going pretty well. I focused on having live plants that are the lookalikes. I didn't get any poison hemlock in the booth this time around. I just have the dead cane. But if you guys know of any that's, you know, easily like roadsides or, you know, someplace where they're friendly enough that we could grab some poison hemlock. There might be some on state routes, but I generally don't venture out onto highways, try to scramble around there unless there's a good reason. So,
well, I don't know if it's still there, but I know a number of years ago at the Scales on Ridgefield on the east side was just a whole row of hemlock and everything. So I don't know if it, there's probably something still trying to grow there. I wouldn't know.
And higher elevations too. It seems like it's earlier in its lifespan in higher elevations. So I'll be on the lookout for it if I can get a fair display. It'd be nice to have fresh purple spots versus our wild carrot that's there.
I farm below the railroad, Burlington Northern, on mouth of Salmon Creek, and Burlington Northern has got tons of hemlock along the right way. And it is on Salmon Creek. I mean, I have, well, I am right there, right alongside of the tracks. I didn't paint, but we have a over the track crossing and a tunnel that we can go through. But the over track crossing is just infested on both sides of the railroad.
Absolutely. And the fair's in full swing, but we're not all the way through it. So next meeting, I might give you a recap of total numbers that we reached at the fair. The Home and Garden Idea Fair went really well earlier in the springtime. So just hope to continue having good outreach on this one. Seems like it's going well. And then finally, I think I'll mention some of the grant work that we have been able to do with Variable Leaf Milfoil and haven't on Tree of Heaven. I'll just throw in a mention. Tree of Heaven, we had the state offer a little bit of money to control Tree of Heaven. in high priority locations, but with the amount of time it takes to get any proposals for grants to be accepted and signed in front of our Clark County Council, the timeline just did not make sense. The timeline for the control work had to get done by the end of June, I think, right, Kevin? This is the end of it, so was just not gonna work. Now, with that said, they have continuing interest, so I imagine unless the funding for that completely dries up, they'll want to do it again. They'll probably put it in front of us again for next year, and we'll have to kind of evaluate that. I feel like that could be a valuable off-season sort of thing that we could do. Yeah, because it's work that we can try to complete in the winter. And it's right up there again with all the other education and outreach that we're already doing. It's a little different from our usual fare, but that's fine. You know, we're making inroads everywhere. And then I always look at things through the lens of, if I go to talk to you about your Tree of Heaven and we're having this conversation, then I'll probably hear about the neighbor down the way that's landlocked that I could never see, but you happen to know he has this other issue, and so I make a lot of inroads with programs like this. So I'll be interested to see how that develops in the future. Now with Variable Leaf Milfoil, we did get the contractor on the hook, so now they are officially working for us. I feel like we are very close with the scheduling on several properties. I think there are six at last count that have small little infestations of variable leaf milfoil, an acre or less, and we can knock those out. The larger infestation at Warren Seeley is a bit more of an issue because of the blueberry farmer, Townsend Farms, who has water rights, and they're downstream. They're in the old Farger Lake bed proper, where Farger Lake used to be, and they have newly planted blueberry bushes. So they are organic certified, and really, that's become the crux of the issue. When we talked to the manufacturer, we got a response back from them that said, they're not concerned with harm to the blueberries, but the organic certification really is the rub. That's gonna be the issue.
Are they pulling water directly out of the ditch?
They're pulling water directly from its source in Rock Creek of Warren Seeley. Now, at that point, it is pretty much a ditch, yeah. Rock Creek is pretty much, yeah, all going through a ditch. But they have a standpipe and a outlet, overflow, what do you call that, spillway sort of thing? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the west end of Warren Seeley. And that becomes Rock Creek there. And so the Townsend Farms people don't get 100% of their water from Warren Seeley and Rock Creek, but it's a substantial portion. And they have said they cannot go for more than 7 days without that water for the entire growing season.
Yeah.
And even having a 7 day window of time, they have said would be a hardship. So we're trying to kind of put a finer point on a lot of this to see how this can actually go. I've talked with the contractor to see what he thinks. And he started talking about other herbicides and the fact that they would all have the same irrigation restrictions, so it's not as if, except for aquathol or endothol, I forget exactly which one he was talking about. There's one that doesn't have irrigation restrictions and be a contact herbicide and would do maybe something. But maybe something on a Class A weed is not really what I'm after. I really would like to see this have the best management practices. That's what we've been trying to do this whole time. So it's an ongoing ongoing process. I hope to try to get something ironed out, but I gotta say, when I have the company, the manufacturer, telling me that it would be very difficult to be within the label and the organic certification requirements, then that's looking iffy at this point. And puts us in kind of a bind, because Class A noxious weeds aren't really in an iffy sort of a place when it comes to legal requirements. So, yeah,
Justin,
kind of hard.
Justin, no, let me back up there.
Hold on, Bill. Lisa was going to say something. She was first.
Yep.
Here's me not being a farmer, so the rest of you could say, would they be able to pull water a well? Would that be, I don't know how much blueberries do they have?
Yeah, that's a good point. We have talked about maybe having a water truck and how much they would need and how much they could fill up their ditches, because they do have some network of ditches that they could fill. But talking with them, my contact person with Townsend Farms is actually the guy that's in charge of the organic certification for them. So kind of their consultant. And he was just trying to express that the amount of water they need, even with filling up all their ditches and, you know, feasibility of having a water truck or any of the other water sources, it's just not great. So they're looking at the alternatives for water, but it's not great.
So frustrating, because that's one of the things that caused milfoil outbursts, is using too many fertilizers, and they're trying not to, and then, you know, that's also creating problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that if we could take care of Warren Seeley and we could survey downstream along Rock Creek and then along the East Fork where Rock Creek empties into, if we could establish facts that say we took care of this, you know, and we don't have downstream infestations. Warren Seeley does not have much upstream of it. It's really just a tiny little seasonal inlet that doesn't go very far. We could cross this one off the list. You know, that's what I'm looking at it as, is let's try to cross this one off of the list and get one of the worst infestations taken care of. So I'm very motivated on that front, and I want to see it done. Concerns of the blueberries still, you know, that's that's something we can't overlook.
Justin, the label, you were talking about that using it on the milfoil, is it toxic to the blueberries also then when they use the water for irrigation?
So the...
And how are they irrigating? By drip?
Yeah, the... Yeah, it is drip irrigation. The manufacturer was saying they don't anticipate any damage to the blueberries.
There wouldn't be any problem with the blueberries.
Right.
So it's just strictly more or less
label,
organic certification, which...
The label specifies that we would need to have a 7-day waiting period to be compliant with the label, because it's not labeled to allow irrigation. So the prescribed waiting period is 7 days. Now, we had talked with the contractor, started talks about, can we break up the treatment into two or more parts such that we could have almost like a trial run where we say, hey, how many parts per billion is it in the water when we do a third of Warren Seeley or whatever, and start to make some headway. And so that's another option that we have kind of in the works, where we're trying to look at feasibility. Not to get too technical, but there is also a test that we can rush through the mail called a fast test to take a water sample and verify how much herbicide is still present, and use that to try to ensure that the water is organic compliant within the time frame to have them restart the irrigation. But with all of these in play, it still looks pretty iffy, because the manufacturer is the one saying, yeah, the organic certification would be in question. And I'm the first one to admit I'm not actually very familiar with who inspects and watches for compliance on all the organic stuff, if it's, you know, self-report or how much auditing goes on. But I would hope that at a certain point you can make your case and show how you've done every effort to be within the confines of state weed law and your organic certification, mm-hmm. and you've done every bit of homework you can do. So
I guess I'm a little frustrated by what you're having to go through, yeah. on this organic certification, yeah. because this organic certification has been a real joke that they've used. For instance, seed, if you cannot find organic seed, you can go ahead and use treated seed and non-organic seed, what, like growing corn or beans or whatever. And so what they do is they'll take and they'll order seed that is a very obscure variety that is pretty well known that there isn't any available. And so since they cannot get it, then they can automatically go and use whatever seed they want to use. Now, that said, I guess I'm a little surprised that there isn't at least something that is a little bit of a
gray area.
You know,
gray area.
Well, or gray area, or kind of it saying that, okay, since this needs to be done, mm-hmm. Can we go ahead and do it? It's about like with the dairy cattle.
Yeah.
They can go ahead and treat dairy cattle for ailments, but they have to put them aside. But are these berry plants that they're irrigating, are they producing berry plants, or are they non-producing? And we're talking this time of year, most of them are done producing, so they wouldn't be receiving any carrying any pollutant or anything.
Yeah,
I just see this, in my estimation, I look at it as being just a ploy by Sealy's to try and make this a little bit hard for everybody and stuff, in my estimation. Because I think there's workarounds that could work. Yeah.
One question I have is, how much residue is left after you use it? If you can only have to withdraw your water for 7 days, how much residue is left from the drips from the prior 2 months or the prior that way? There may be something. The parts per million is the answer, but who can afford the testing?
Well, and one other thing is to go with that is, okay, they're saying 7 days, but honestly, they have a root reserve in there that, you know, if they had to wait 10 days, it's not going to kill those berry plants. It may not get the optimum production, but, you know, it's not going to kill the berry plant to wait 10 days instead of 7.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, the last time that we scheduled a meeting with all stakeholders, the representative from the farm didn't make it to the meeting. So I plan to have continued meetings with all stakeholders. Now we can include the contractor, who has lots of experience with using this particular product and others. And my hope is that if we get more attendance and buy-in from the farmer, that they can take some general anxiety and turn it into, like I was saying before, specifics. If we can get specific details of, here's how long we are willing to go without water, or here's how we will do something on our end. Because, yeah, I think it's going to take everybody pull in the same direction. And, yeah, I want them to express specifically what they're afraid of and what we can do about it. Because, like you're saying, with the organic certification, we have the law on our side of this is a weed that needs to be controlled. Not just controlled, but eradicated, since it's Class A. And how that gets done, let's talk with you about how that gets done. But I look at it to say I'm still hopeful, even though it's looking iffy, that I'm still hopeful that we can find a solution that will work well enough for everybody. And if we have more buy-in from the farm, that they'll start to get a little bit more confident with it. Procellacor itself as an herbicide is specially registered as one of the more friendly alternatives, since it's used in such very, very small quantities. It's parts per billion. That's one of those things that we definitely have going for us. That's it's a positive on our side. So, more to come on that. We'll see where that ends up. But we're working on it. Yeah, we've got permitting from Ecology, Department of Ecology, in the works. I should have that very, very soon, so that we're prepared for all of these herbicide treatments. And the other landowners are on board. You know, I've been talking with them, and they're, ready to get underway. And they have been reporting to me that it's the worst that it's been at their place. So
is Seeley's the farthest upstream?
It's scattered. It's all over. So okay. North County has it on three different watersheds at this point.
Wow.
So yeah, we have lots of it out there in lots of places. They are the farthest up for Rock Creek.
Great for Rock Creek.
But they're on the East Fork. We've got lots on the North Fork, and we've got some on Cedar Creek. So we've got it in Lake Merwin. So that's.
Justin, how many applications do you need to apply to the herbicide?
Yes, that's a good question. So,
what was your question?
Yeah, to know how many applications it's going to take to get rid of variable leaf. I have evidence from other applications. Procellacor is the best herbicide for the job, but even still, we can't guarantee that it'll be a one and done walk away from it. At other locations, they've had greater than 90% where what comes back is very, very small, limited, and was on edges of treatment zones. But I think that we're facing additional problems because of the seed bank issue. There can be viable seeds that are in the sediment at the bottom of the water body, and those can then germinate again. So
it's not possible to do the treatment during the winter?
No, it needs to be done during the growing season. And the contractor has a good sense of when we can do this, but from what I've seen, it needs to get done during the time frame that is still a growing season for one plant is still the growing season for most plants. So the only other wiggle room is if we could do the treatment in a very early year scenario. That was what Townsend Farms was talking about this year, was, well, can you do it right away, right now, can you do it tomorrow? Because, you know, if you do it really early in the spring, but I said, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It's very capable in its roots, I would just say. Very, very strong root system.
We haven't noticed it until now. It came out of the county road ditch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't.
And they don't spray for it at all.
No,
yeah. It's not required to control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Native plant. Yep, native plant.
You sound like a politician.
We do spray for it in certain occasions. And yeah. We use Telar.
It breaks
we'll
up the road.
Our spray truck.
But, yeah. It breaks up the roadway, actually.
We haven't. As you mentioned, we haven't had the spray truck operational this year, so that'll be back in operation here shortly.
Yeah, I seen it coming up towards the pavement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Make its way in, huh?
Yeah. Go.
Mm-hmm. Right on through.
I'm not kidding, though, about how expensive Telar is. It'll make your eyes pop out of their sockets when you see that. Mm-hmm. Especially the size of
the container.
So how much are you talking?
It's concentrated.
Well, yes, it is. It's extremely concentrated. To be fair, yes.
Yeah, but it'll kill the horsetail and not tiny the hay field.
Yes. Yeah. It's selective, but there's plenty of considerations because it's root uptake. It's not as much on foliar. There's some, I think. It's been a long time since I've used Telar. Long time. So, yeah, make sure to research it all the way if that's the way you're wanting to go.
Well, your spray truck you keep talking about is you buying the ones out of Canada? There's a company in Canada for the Midwest farmers that they're building semi-trailers and they can carry, 6,200 gallons or something or other of water, and everything is automated. You just take and, you know, you want to put in so much atrazine or whatever, you just pull a handle and it automatically pumps in and does this and all, and it's like, wow, man, yeah. Amazing. There's several guys that, well, they were saying this company, they produce about one a day of these spray trucks. And I'm going, you're kidding. There's that much sale for them? Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many thousand they are, but anyhow, yeah.
Yeah, right up there with Telar.
Yeah. Well, Telar, you're talking about it, but gosh, we have some product that have one that's $900 for a little deal here, but it covers 30 acres, though too. So, yeah.
That sounds similar.
Yeah.
How's it compared to Oust then in price?
It's more expensive than Oust, yeah. Mm-hmm. But similar idea, you know, similar idea there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would Oust work?
That's possible. You would want to get the most up-to-date information there, because it's been, like I say, it's been a long time since I went after any horsetail and tried to get rid of it.
A few years back, I had some horsetail creeping into one end of a pasture, and I did some research on it, and somebody said, well, never use that old cheap MCPA.
Oh, mm-hmm.
The MCPA will knock it, but it won't kill the root, but it'll burn back the...
Maybe after three or four applications get it.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you're looking to try and keep it out of the hay for that season,
yeah,
and you know where it's at, and you're it's legal in that area to use it, mm-hmm. then...
cheap.
Then I would use the MCPA, and it'll actually burn it down for that hay season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What is it called?
MCPA.
Yeah.
It's cheap.
Of course, MCP, well, not anymore. It's not.
Oh, is that right?
It's Weedmaster now.
Oh.
Mm. Mm. But I know the grazing restrictions are more permissive on some levels, on some labels of the ones that have that active ingredient, because that's also the active ingredient name, too. So kind of muddies the water a little bit. But yeah, mm-hmm. more grazing friendly.
Mm-hmm. I got one thing for the good of the order if we're getting close to the end.
There.
And that is, I learned this morning at coffee at 6 a.m., but a lot of people have gotten flyers that I-5 North Fork Bridge being closed down for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Not completely.
Oh, wow.
They're narrowing the lanes up to 2 lanes. They suggest that people, everybody got flyers. I didn't get one, but everybody I talked to this morning, and they said don't merge until you get there, and merge right at the bridge is what they're recommending.
Right.
But there are wait lines. They said will probably be 7 miles long.
Oh gosh!
And Fridays are bad, and Saturday afternoons are worse.
Which exit is this again?
Huh?
Which exit? Again?
South of Woodland.
Just the first bridge south.
Is it just the northbound or more north and south?
North, just the northbound.
These back roads are going to suck.
Yeah. And it's going to back it to the Ridgefield overpass from there, and they said it was for 2 months.
Yeah.
So.
When does it start?
Just a heads up. Next week.
Next week, huh?
Two months.
Our daughter
all week long.
Yeah.
Well, because they're tearing the bridge up, so you can't use it on weekends too.
You mentioned Saturday.
Yeah. Well, they were talking Saturday.
It's going to be closed
all volume area.
Yeah. That's high volume.
Yeah, high volume Fridays and Saturdays, and they list the timeline on that forum, what you can kind of expect. But it kind of caught me off guard this morning. But and different ones I've told, they were shocked. But now they're glad to know it, so if they get into it, they know what's happening.
Yeah.
They're tearing all the deck off and redecking it. I don't know, the asphalt, asphalt or whatever. So they'll do one half, and then they're going to shift over
the other side.
It's the other half and do the other half in that two-month period.
Mm. So. Our daughter works at the fairgrounds and lives in Longview. That's going to be real miserable for her.
No, because they were supposed to start it this week, and they postponed.
Well, but she works year-round at the fairgrounds.
Okay, postponed it until next week. Well, she won't have any trouble getting to work. It's just forget about getting home.
Yeah.
So, go stay with Mom and Pop.
She's going to come over to your house.
Yeah, she'll leave her her son there at home alone. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Can I say one thing real quick? I don't know if you've been doing it every year, but I noticed it this year where you sent out correspondence to people who received letters the previous year for Tansy or Hemlock or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got from previous customers, I got a lot of calls from that. It's like, they say I've got this. No, if you read it, it says, but I mean, it really, people paid attention to that when they got it.
Yes.
So that's something I would definitely continue to repeat.
Yeah. We've done that 3 years now?
Good idea.
Or 2 years?
At least two.
Yeah, okay. It's been 2 years for sure. We started off doing that just for the Class A weeds and poison hemlock, and now we're doing it for tansy as well. And we've definitely seen a lot of people who are more aware because we're doing that. Yeah, and we've also
the reminder letters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had one of my customers that I lease a field from. Mm-hmm. It's got a small section that sits up by the road, and it was like on my mind to make sure that it's nothing but a weed crop at that place, but. One day I'm driving along going, I got to take a look at this. And I saw a county truck going the other direction. And I said, I wonder if somebody, and like a week later, after I'd already taken it down and taken all that stuff, my lessor got a letter. And it's like, I know. I figured as soon as I saw the truck, it's like, darn it. I didn't get
like
there.
Yours truly. Yeah. Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, and we're also sending a letter at the very end of the season now in the cases where they haven't controlled it enough and it's gone to seed. So we call that the propagation letter to make sure that people understand that they didn't do a good enough job. So they could end up receiving 4 letters from us in a year. One, the reminder letter, a warning letter, a violation letter, and a propagation letter that say, look, you did not comply with the law, and the time for meaningful efforts to comply with the law is over. You've already passed that window.
Well, you'd be sending that out prior to when you would normally spray the rosettes going into the end of fall?
We send it out as soon as we see that the plants are propagated. Okay, yeah. Okay. So the standing order is that as soon as you can see a sizable portion, if that's 10% or whatever, 10% of the seeds are dropping, then yeah, we can send that letter off that early on. So we've sent out a fair number of those already this year to places that haven't controlled it enough. And sometimes we have some very fruitful conversations from doing that, because people pay a contractor and they give some sort of instructions. I don't know what I wonder what in the world they told the contractor to do, because something happens at the property, but they didn't actually control the weeds to comply with the law, and then they think they're done, you know, because they paid the contractor. So when they get a propagation letter, then it really helps us to have more conversations that say what's going on.
That's job security for staff.
Well, yeah. And the other thing that we've been doing a lot more is to be very descriptive in the middle of the letter that has the big highlighted portion in yellow that says what's going on. You know, what did the person who looked at the property actually see? And what's the conditions? Because if that middle of the letter says something different on the violation letter as an update to what they saw on the warning letter, it might be that you get a warning letter that says the whole south section of your field has poison hemlock. And then the violation letter says portions of the southern area of your field where you didn't mow. And then they can look out and see, oh yeah, I didn't mow over there, and oh, I didn't mow over there, and then it gets descriptive. And in the propagation letter, after that, it can be even more descriptive, and it can give a further update. So Chris will just pull the notes straight from the reports, and you know, make sure they make sense and are a good description. But we can specifically lay out what happened. You know, if we see that they are spraying, but the spray didn't take, you know, we can put that in there. And so we've been hearing a lot of feedback about these letters that we're doing now.
The other thing too that I like that you, you know, when you get into fairs and things like that, a lot of the customers, well, not for me, a lot of the property owners, they really have no idea of what it really takes to kill them, and so they'll just hire somebody and come in and spray it, and they don't, it's like, you know, well, if you're at this point spraying, it's not going to do any good. Mm-hmm. You know, but your letter does say that needs to be pulled. Mm-hmm. But or cut and bagged and whatever, but
it does. Yeah,
but the thing they don't understand is, you know, if you actually, it's like again with blackberries, you can spray blackberries all spring long if you want. It's just going to keep growing back over the summer till you spray it in the fall and get to the roots. And yeah, same with anything that's the biennials, that you know, it just sends the rosettes up in the fall, and then it's nice and healthy, and then goes to sleep for the winter, and then, you know, it's right there first thing. Mm-hmm. If they understood that, then, but I don't, there's no real way to get that out to everybody. I mean, you can tell the customer at a time, but mm-hmm. There's a lot of money that's wasted.
You hate to sit there and watch it grow out into your field,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I spray it to try to keep it coming out.
Yeah, I love the neighbors where you spray somebody's property here, but like next door it's just infested with.
Yeah.
And you try to talk to them and they just think you're just trying to get business. Like, no, I'm trying to keep the ones who really want to keep it that way, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take long of it.
That's on the tansy this year. Has people been seeing a lot of the tansy bugs?
Mm-hmm. It's locally abundant is what I've noted. So it'll be quite high in certain places.
That's what I've noticed.
Spotty.
I haven't seen one.
Lots of
them. Down our way, I haven't seen one. Yeah.
I seen the moths earlier this year, and I pulled right out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And now I got to go through there, and there's stems sticking up. They really ate them.
Mm-hmm. So on another note on Tansy, have you had your annual visit with Victor Bloomquist?
Haven't heard.
Wow.
Heard. No?
Okay. Okay. All right.
You definitely remember.
Oh, yeah.
What was that, maybe same time next year or something like that?
If you've ever met Victor, it's an experience.
Mm-hmm. A lucky win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think we've beat the horses enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So no additional items from the board. Additional discussion. Next meeting, November 6th. If I put the glasses on.
Mm-hmm.
Same time, same place.
Mm-hmm. Elk season.
Lee's got a light going on.
Yeah. No, I got a surgery stated for that day. Maybe I can get it changed. 14 days later. That's on a Monday, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, no, mine's the 3rd. Friday.
Oh.
It's a Friday.
Oh, okay.
I got a hernia, but it's in-house or whatever that way. I mean, four-hour deal and go home.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, good luck on the surgery.
Yeah.
Well, I've had a hernia for 10 years. Navel.
Oh,
it doesn't bother me at all.
Uh-huh.
Nothing. And 6 months ago, the doctor said you're going to die. I still am not dead. And I said, I'm putting it off till fall when I'm not doing nothing. But, yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting then.
All right.
Go out to the fair. Have a good time. Mm-hmm.